Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio. This is Garth, and today we're going to be talking with Preston Taylor. Preston is a senior tracker in the cyber tracker process, and he works at Marble Mountain Adventures. Today we will be talking with Preston about bow hunting from a tracker's perspective.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Preston. I really appreciate it, being able to talk to you about bow hunting today.
Oh, you're welcome, Garth. It's great to be here.
I'd like to start out a little bit with your school you got there, Marble Mountain Adventures. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Matt Nelson and I are running this operation, and we do outdoor adventures and ecotourism and hunter training clinics. We offer trailing and track and sign classes, wildlife viewing in Redwood National Park and the wilderness areas nearby, and we're interested in teaching people how to learn how to hunt ethically and correctly, and so those are the different varieties of options we offer right now.
So you said you teach track and sign and trailing, and that's one of my questions is they're very related. But also they're kind of separate. Somebody can get really good at track and sign and not necessarily be that good at trailing and vice versa. So from a bow hunter's perspective, how do these two, tell us about these two aspects of tracking and how you use them as a hunter.
Sure. So we'll start with track and sign. There's three basic methods of hunting, from a track and sign perspective, and that would be ambush hunting, setting up ground blinds or tree stands, still hunting, and spot and stalk. So to set up a proper ambush, you have to be able to read the landscape and know where to sit so that when an animal walks by, they'll be close enough to you to shoot, and that you'll be in the position where the animal will walk by at all. So that involves identifying travel corridors, bedding areas, and feeding areas, and then positioning yourself in a place where you'll be downwind and concealed when the animals come by. So, for example, when I'm hunting blacktail deer in the mountains near my house, I know where they bed and where they feed, and I set up along a trail in between those areas, and usually below the trail because the thermals are coming downhill in the morning, and then I wait. And that could mean waiting for sometimes up to 7 hours, you know, and oftentimes not seeing anything
yeah.
or seeing an animal that walks by too far, you know, beyond my ability to shoot. And so that's ambush hunting. Still hunting, or it might be more appropriately called sneaking around, involves really quietly moving through an area where you expect to find animals. So you have to be able to identify a patch of woods that the animals will be at when you're going to sneak through there. And so that could be finding acorns that are dropping from the trees and knowing that the animals will be feeding there, or it could be knowing where they bed and sneaking around when they're going to bed there. So that's still hunting. And then spot and stalk involves, you know, looking for an animal and seeing it first and then planning a route to sneak in close. And so all three of those approaches require some knowledge of animal and the land. And a lot of times that comes from seeing the sign on the land. So seeing feeding sign, identifying game paths and where they lead and where they come from, and finding bedding areas and knowing when they're using them, you know, during the day or the night. So that's kind of an approach from the track and sign perspective. From the trailing perspective, there's two aspects to trailing animals, and one is following a specific set of tracks or group of tracks to find the animal that you're hunting, and the other is following a track after you've shot the animal to recover it. And very, very few people trail animals to actually hunt them, because it's very difficult, and a lot of times the substrate isn't appropriate for it. You know, it might be just too loud. You know, in my bow hunting season, the ground has been dry for months, and the twigs and the leaves are very loud, and it's really difficult to approach a deer, you know, into 10 yards, which is where I like to be, at that time of year. And it's also hard to stay on the trail when it's that dry, you know, around here in my country. But it's really exciting and really fun when you're able to do it. So that's trailing to hunt an animal. And then almost all hunters are familiar with tracking an animal after you shoot it to recover it. However, too many hunters rely on a blood sign to recover their animal, and it's pretty common to either not find blood for the first stretch after you shot the animal, say 50 yards, and with some animals, like bears, a well-hit animal provides less of a blood trail than a poorly hit animal. And so this is something I've experienced, you know, firsthand and with talking with more experienced bear hunters. When you put an arrow through them, through their vitals, a lot of times you don't get a very good blood trail. But I've seen other people injure bears in the legs, and we've had great blood trails that eventually peter out and we never find that animal. So trailing to find an animal after you shoot it requires a lot more than just following blood, and something that all hunters should practice, you know, along with their shooting ability. So that's kind of a quick intro to approaching, you know, hunting from a track and sign or trailing perspective.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff. Thanks. I'm also thinking about all the other variables out there, you know, like how you move. You know, you got to pay attention to wind, sand, or sound and smells. And how do you deal with all those variables? Do you visit an area a lot before you go out and get to know all those different aspects? Or
yeah, that's tough, and that's all part of hunting. The best scenario is that you get to watch and track animals where you can also hunt, because then you know that the lay of the land, you know, the best, and that's the best scenario. And when I lived in Southern California, the trailing during hunting season was excellent, and so that was, you know, the main way that I hunted, and it was a lot of fun. And it was also, I was close to the places that I hunted when I lived there, so I would go out and trail and watch animals outside of the season more than during the hunting season. But where I currently live, the hunting is up in the wilderness areas, and so I don't get there as much out of the season, so it's a little tough. But I practice trailing, and I practice watching animals outside of the hunting season, you know, almost all year. So when you're trailing to hunt something, you have to be aware of the wind, and you have to be aware of your noise. And noise includes audible noise as well as visual noise. You know, you can't be flailing your arms around or moving in a way that alerts animals to your presence. It's tough. So when you're out tracking an animal and your goal is just to catch up to it, to see it, to learn its behavior, it's a little different. You know, like Jose Ortega Gasset said, the hunter is the alert man. When I get on a fresh track and I'm going to follow that elk track with the intention of hunting that animal, it's very different. I spend less time looking at the tracks. I'm looking more at the landscape ahead with the intention of spotting the animal before it is aware of me. And so that's a very different game. And for some reason, it enlivens me in a way that's different when I'm not hunting. And so when you're in that state of mind, you're constantly paying attention to the breeze. You're smelling the breeze, because a lot of times you can smell an elk before you see it. You're just sort of churned up to a higher level of alertness.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, a lot of the tracking that I do here is the track and sign stuff, and a lot of it's with other people, and I think it's missing some of that, it could be missing a little bit of that aliveness that you're talking about, where you have to really pay attention to all these little subtle wind changes and all that sound and everything like that.
Yeah, I want to point out that it's very difficult. It's not like I'm trailing animals and catching up to them and spotting them and stalking into 10 yards every time I get on a trail, you know?
Yeah.
The majority of the time, when I get on a fresh track and the substrate is good, I'm probably going to find that animal. But the majority of the time, they spook because they've heard me or seen me or smelled me before I get in there. But occasionally, I see the elk bedded down behind some brush before it knows I'm there, and I get to sneak in close, and occasionally it works out, but I don't want to give the impression that it does every time.
Yeah, it's
very difficult.
Because not only do you have to track it to see it, then you have to track it and get in a position where you could have a shot.
Exactly. And so, for example, this past fall, I was a little closer to your home turf up on the coast of Oregon, hunting the Roosevelt elk. And I, a handful of times, got on fresh trails and followed them to within 20 or 30 yards of the elk. But it's so thick there that I couldn't see them. I could hear them walking around, and I couldn't see them. And eventually, the wind swirled. And they smelled me, and they left, But even getting close to the animal doesn't mean they're going to get a shot.
Yeah. Well, this year was actually the very first year I went out and tried bow hunting, and I was unsuccessful. But it definitely brought to my awareness that you have to be able to sit in the cold, and you have to be able to move around. Moving through the forest carrying a bow was a whole different ball game than just walking around through the forest, with just a backpack on or something. That bow was a whole new level of maneuvering.
Yeah, and where I hunt now, like I said, it's pretty dry and loud to move around, and so as much fun as trailing is. What I've come to realize is that I get more really close opportunities at animals who are relaxed when I find a good place and just sit there and wait for them to come to me. And it's hard to sit for hours, watching the bees pollinate flowers,
Yeah.
But when you're in the right position and an animal comes walking down that trail and it doesn't know you're there, they're relaxed and you get a lot closer, because it's just so difficult to try to sneak into 10 yards on a deer. So I've come, I love tracking, I love trailing, but it's more productive for me to find a good place to sit in the country that I'm in right now. And I'm talking about deer hunting,
Yeah. Yeah, I was having trouble actually sitting in a spot where I felt like I could also have a view and be able to pull my bow back without being detected.
Oh, yeah, that's all part of the game, too.
There's
so many variables. A couple of years ago, I trailed some bull elk and found where they had bedded down. and snuck in close, and I was trying to sneak in on the one that was bedded a little above the other one because the wind was kind of coming uphill. And the lower one had been sleeping with his head flat on the ground, but he popped his head up while I was stalking in, so I got stuck in this really weird position on a rock because he was chewing his cud and looking around. And about 15 minutes later, the other elk had gotten up and started to walk past me 7 yards away. But I was in a position that I had never practiced shooting from. And so when I tried to draw my bow, I made this huge movement with my arms, you know, and the elk just jumped and ran off before I could take a shot. And, you know, I was left there shaking.
Yeah. Well, I did have a cool experience when I was out there trying to hunt, though. I was trying to use the stalk around technique for a while, and I just kind of sat down in the middle of the trail, and as I was sitting there, I was watching some juncos, and one of the juncos went up to one of the branches and started, you know, making a lot of focused noise down on the trail ahead of me, and when I looked down mm-hmm. there was a coyote that came and, you know, looked right at me, and I was like, oh, cool, so... I thought that was really cool how the junco seemed to alert to the coyote. Do you use the birds in any way?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if it's intentional, but you know, definitely chipmunks have alerted me to bears coming down the trail. I don't know if it's intentional though. I try not to scare birds while I'm walking around.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of times when I'm sitting waiting for animals, I do a lot of birding. And so you see the robins change their behavior when a sharpshin comes into view or different things like that. But I'm not sure if it's intentional. You know, when you're trailing, you try not to scare the birds while you're moving through the brush. Yeah. But I like that story that you said, because when you're out bow hunting, you're really looking for animals. And you're moving through the woods like a predator, and so you do see a lot of animals. And one of the critiques I have with the tracking community is that we don't focus enough on the animals. You know, it's all about the animals, and the tracks are just there to help us find them. You know, there's not too many people looking at tracks under bridges all day, and not enough people out there watching animals.
Right, yeah. What kind of equipment? Do you use a longbow or a recurve or a compound?
Yeah, so I hunt with a longbow, and I don't want to start any, you know, rifts between the bow hunting community, but right. I just prefer a longbow. I think it's a little more elegant. I used to hunt with bows that I made. I would cut down the tree and carve them myself. Last year I switched to a more modern laminate bow. It just provides a little bit, a little easier to shoot. My accuracy has improved a little bit, and it's a little more efficient, which is why I switched to that kind of bow. It provides a little more power. But I just prefer the longbow because of its elegance, and it's really lightweight, and I like to make the equipment, and so I like that part of it. And it feels more like hunting. Me, the whole purpose of the archery season is to provide the hunter with a greater challenge, and I run into a lot of compound shooters that take shots at distances that most people would shoot with a rifle with iron sights, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just prefer the longbow. I know some excellent bow hunters that use compounds that are much better hunters than I am, and so it does. Your choice of equipment doesn't mean anything about your ability to hunt. You know, it's just what I prefer.
Another one of the maybe small challenges I felt like I was facing was I actually wasn't even sure how to carry my arrows as I'm moving around.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Do I leave it notched up or do I leave it in the quiver? Yeah. You know, if I leave it in the quiver, that's going to be a huge movement. Yeah. And it, I actually didn't have a quiver. I was just carrying 3 arrows in one hand, so because I didn't know what to do.
My first season, I did the same thing. I carried arrows in one hand and my bow in the other, and then the next season, I had a hip quiver, which is a little quiver that hangs on your belt. And then the season after that, I found a bow quiver, which slides onto your limbs, and holds your arrows on the side of your bow. And that for me has been the most efficient way to carry arrows, because the arrows are then aligned with your bow. And so when you're slipping through the brush, when you push your bow forward, the arrows go with it. And, you know, if they're in your pack or on your side or in your hand, they can drag against the brush, you know. And
right.
That's the best way I found is with a bow quiver.
Do you set up a blind anytime ahead of time, or you just go out there and kind of feel it out and say, this is the spot this morning, or?
I do both. I don't have an actual ground blind that I purchase, but I definitely go out and scout the area, and I find places where I think will provide good opportunities, and then I look for a place on the trail to set up, which is usually downhill, because it's so steep here and the thermals are always moving. Then I find some kind of backdrop, like it's good to have a tree behind you or a brush to sit up against, and then I clear, you know, limbs around the area so I can draw my bow and shoot, and I scrape away all the sticks and debris so that it's bare soil where I'll be sitting, so you can kind of shuffle your feet around without making noise. And I also pull some stumps over to sit on, you know, because you want to be relatively comfortable, not necessarily like comfortable like your armchair, but I've spent too many hours kneeling or standing to realize that I can stay in one place longer if I can sit on the stump, you know?
Right. Yeah. I was noticing that my positions and my foot would go numb after a half an hour, and then have to like play this slow moving game to let the blood back in. And
yeah. And that just, you know, there's no reason to have to worry about that kind of stuff. You want to be hunting and looking for animals rather than working on how well you can sit still, you know?
Yeah. What about hunters are really good about thinking about ecology and future generations. What are some of your thoughts? This is kind of probably a really big topic, I would imagine, but, you know, hunters and caretaking.
Yeah, that is a big topic. It's ironic and unique that hunters love the animals that they're trying to kill.
Yeah.
And some people don't understand that, and some hunters don't understand it either. But especially people that love to be out in the bush and just love hunting in general, they're out there all the time. You know, I'm out there watching animals for longer during the year than I'm out there hunting, because there's more months in the year that are closed to hunting than open. And that's true for most of the really dedicated hunters that I know. And when you've spent, you know, a lot of time getting to know, you know, a patch of woods and the animals that live there, you really come to feel like it's part of you, and you want to, see that opportunity out there for others to be able to experience. And so I think most people that spend a lot of time in the woods, you know, generally want to contribute to some kind of conservation so that there's healthy habitat and healthy game populations for others to enjoy in the future, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And also, too, the more time you spend out there watching animals, the more you come to notice the destruction that happens, you know, as well when developments get put in or when rivers get polluted, those kind of things, you know, stick out to you. And so you feel invested in doing what you can to help that stuff from happening.
And some of the hunts that you guys do there are invasive species hunts too, also, aren't they? Like the hogs are not native there, I don't think.
No, they're not native. We do hunt wild hogs, and that's a pretty big can of worms. You know, down there where Matt lives, Matt Nelson, those guys live on wild hogs. I mean, there's a lot of poor folk there that subsist on them. And and something we've been playing around with, the idea of there aren't very many bears in that area, and it's kind of like the hogs there have taken over the ecological niche that the bears played. And I know in some areas that the wild hogs definitely destroy the habitat, rooting up around the oaks and exposing the roots to the elements, and then the trees topple over or different things like that. But it's hard. Yeah, that's a hard thing. And the other problem is that if we're just talking about ethical, legitimate hunting, and especially bow hunting, that's not the best way to remove an invasive species, you know?
Yeah.
I've been down there to Matt's place with my bow, and I've missed 3 hogs. I've yet to kill one with my bow. I've put 3 arrows over their backs. I'm going down in 2 weeks again. But, you know, if someone was trying to get rid of the hogs, I wouldn't be the guy to hire.
So what would you say about to somebody that's just, you know, thinking about bow hunting and they have no idea how to enter this world? What would you suggest
to them? I would say, first of all, try to find a local archery club. Most places have an archery club. They usually have a range as well, and there'll be experienced archers there, and they can help you work on the proper equipment and shooting form and things like that, and they can also help you understand what bow hunting is all about, and they might take you out in the field and help you learn that way as well. So use Google or go to an outdoor store in your area and try to find an archery club near you. And then secondly, I would say get on the internet, and there's a forum. The Traditional Bowhunter Magazine has an online forum, and it's a great, you know, internet community of people that discuss all kinds of things about bow hunting, equipment, technique, the ethics, and that's a really great resource. And then get out there and do it. You know, you just have to get out in the woods and do it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means learning by making mistakes. And to be honest, sometimes mistakes mean injuring animals. And that's going to happen. If you're going to start hunting, you have to reconcile the fact that at some point, you will probably injure an animal and not be able to recover it. So you're going to have to be okay with that. It's not like we want to do that, but you need to be ready for that. And you need to practice. Archery involves a lot of practice, especially when you're hunting with traditional equipment. You know, I practice all year. You need to practice your shooting skills, and you need to identify your effective range. And you need to have the moral backbone to not shoot beyond your effective range. So when you've got a bull elk at 30 yards broadside with his head behind a bush, you know, I've had to turn down that shot because I know I can't make that, you know?
Right. So you really got to know your limits.
Got to know your limits. And then I would also say you got to practice finding animals. You know, please practice tracking. There's a lot of hunters out there that just aren't good enough at tracking and recovering game. You know, like I said earlier, we leave a lot of bears in my area, black bears, and a lot of people hunt them, and not very many people are good at tracking them. And you don't get a good blood trail a lot of times with bears, and so you have to be able to follow their sign without blood. So I really would encourage people to get out there and practice tracking, practice finding animals, practice identifying the animal's sex and age and seeing them through the brush and all that stuff. And then remember to have fun, you know.
Yeah.
You want it to be an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, so as far as telling the sex from the tracks, let's see, in deer, isn't it the difference of the size of the front foot and the hind foot?
Yeah, so generally, in mature bucks, that front foot is a lot bigger than the hind foot. You know, when you see a mature deer like over 3 years old, they're just so much bigger than a doe anyway. You know, around me with the blacktails, once a buck reaches maturity, his hind foot is longer than my pinky, and it's just huge. You can look at that and know that it's a buck. But with the younger ones, you might have to, you know, carefully measure the length and width of that hoof. And if it's bigger than the hind foot, it usually means it's a male. And you can also tell from the behavior as you're following the trail. You know, bucks just move differently than does. They approach the world differently, just like a teenage guy does. You know,
yeah.
They sort of bulldoze through the landscape, you know, where a doe will kind of weave around bushes, a buck will often just jump over them or go right through, you know, so they have a different attitude and it shows up in their tracks. Yeah.
Wow. Is that kind of the same then carry over to elk?
Yeah. Yeah. So elk, I think it's easier to identify a bull elk from its tracks, than with deer. You know, on the mountain behind my house, we've got, big mature bulls, and then we've got some young satellite bulls they call raghorns, like 2 or 3 year olds, and then we've got a spike bull too. And so the yearling spike bull has a track that's closest to a female cow elk's, but you can still see that front track is starting to get kind of round, and it's a little wider than that hind track. And it just looks, it's just, the front track is just shaped a little differently than the cow elk. And then once you get up to that, the bigger bulls, I mean, they're just huge, you know,
yeah.
There's just no comparison. Yeah.
Well, I really want to thank you for taking the time to share all this knowledge with us.
Oh, this was fun, Garth.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. So I suggest everybody check out Marble Mountain Adventures and see what they're up to down there.
Okay. Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Talk to you later. Bye.
See you, Garth.